life is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Well, in a world where challenges are plentiful, it's easy for us to feel discouraged. Yet with enough guidance and support, most people can achieve more in life than they ever dreamed possible. Well, beyond your fears is everything you ever dreamed of. For the Dr. Stem Show, we'll give the voiceless a voice and the hopeless hope. And now, here she is, Dr. Stem.
The epidemic of bullying. Welcome to the Dr. Stem Show. Today's conversation is probably a long-awaited conversation that we needed to do a long time ago on the epidemic of bullying as it is on the rise. I have an expert with me, Rachel, and she was gracious enough to write for me how to pronounce her last name, Weinstock. Welcome to the show, Miss Rachel.
Thank you. You got the pronunciation perfect.
Oh, because she's a teacher, you all. Just at least, I give you a background of her. She's a teacher, an elementary school teacher. So, of course, she would know to say, you know what, let me write it how to pronounce it, Weinstock. So, thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
So, you know what, let me give the audience just a little bit of background, because what happened was I was on Facebook, as everybody is on Facebook every day now, and here comes a comment from, Miss Weinstock that came through my page, and she was doing an event last weekend. And of course this, event had to do with children, with teenagers, and anything that has to do with teenagers, children, parents, my eyes are always right on point. I get to look at it. So that's how I got to chat with her, and then realize that not only was she doing this event, but she is actually a person who has experienced bullying and has been, on tour and talking about in schools and in conferences as a speaker on bullying, about her experience, which she will share with us today. So I'm excited to have you with us, today, Ms. Weinstock.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stem.
And what was that event about again last weekend?
Right. So it was about, essentially, it's how to create emotionally safe and empowering spaces for all children in the classroom and beyond. So it's rooted in how to connect with kids in a really, way that's deep, so that it empowers them to be the best they can be, and then create spaces within the classroom and beyond the classroom that becomes like a community where we all rise up. We're all the best of each, like ourselves, and then we support one another. So it has its roots in anti-bullying, and it definitely has roots from my own story, but it's the work that I do. So it's not just anti-bullying, like I stop anybody making fun of somebody, but it's also creating a safe space and then empowering kids to rise up and be their very best.
Oh, wow. Well, let's get back to, the time that bullying started for you. Probably was it in elementary school when you started school?
Yeah. So I'm now a teacher. I've been a teacher for 15 years, but kindergarten was a year that I didn't have any bullying happen. I just was kind of like a very sensitive, creative child. I had some friends, but I just kind of was cruising along my life in kindergarten. And then in grade one, I started getting bullied, and that led us pretty much all the way into high school. So it was pretty traumatic. It was very traumatic, actually. It was not pretty traumatic. It was very traumatic. Mm. And there were many different groups of people that were doing that. So at the time in grade one, it was one particular child. Her family was going through a divorce, and she obviously was not getting the proper support emotionally that she needed to process things, which, although it's like 30 something years later, like 35 years later from when I was that age, I still see a lot of this happening in schools, where kids are coming to school and, like, it's the parents are going through this, and it's a lot of trauma for them, but then the kids aren't always getting support on how to process this. So then behaviors come out through, interactions in the classroom and at school. So she had to put her pain on somebody, and she chose me as a target. And that led into her saying to all the kids in the grade, you're not allowed to play with Rachel every single recess and except last recess. And in addition, they made a spy club on me. So it was like the shame of not having any friends and anxiety. But then on top of it, they were watching kind of under a microscope of what I was doing, how I was dealing with this trauma while it was happening. So it was pretty intense. The point where my mom got involved was the point where, I don't remember this, she told me this years later, but I said I want to kill myself and I was six. And that's when she got involved. And eventually, you know, this child, quote unquote, forgave me and said, okay, now you can play with people and you should be happy that I'm letting you play with them. But I never had, like, there was no teacher that intervened and there was no support on talking about how to interact. And, you know, that's back in the 80s, but I still see many, many, many things on the daily of this kind of stuff happening still. And that's why I've dedicated my life to doing this work, because I just really felt like the adults, my feeling always was when I was a child, the adults don't know what they're doing. Like, I could feel some of them wanted to do something, but they just did not know. And, you know, I had a lot of anger about that and suffered a lot, but also knew there has to be a better way. And so the way I teach now is exactly the person that I needed when I was a child and never had. So it's pretty interesting because I've never left school. Like, all my jobs have been in education and working with kids. And it's my biggest passion is to create these safe spaces and also empowering spaces for kids.
Yeah. So then at 6 year old, Ms. Weinstein, here's the thing. Did you talk to the teachers? Did you tell mom what was going on at that time?
So I did tell my parents. I think that, you know, one of the things that I really know to be true and nobody really explained to me at the time, we always heard about flight or fright, like you're running away from something or you're fighting something, but we never heard about freeze. And freeze is, you know, what I see all the time in myself and also my students is, you know, when you're scared of something, like all the kind of layers of that, like if I stand up for myself, she's going to take more action towards me. So I think I cried a lot. I don't think I actually said anything at that point in my journey. I did speak up and ask for support many times over in my journey as I grew older. But at that point, I think I just had spoken to my mom. I was so little. I was six, you know. And so that's who I went to for that.
Oh, okay. Because I'm thinking, right, for you know, children that are at that age, which is the elementary school, even the bully herself, if she's not taught what mm-hmm. bullying is, mm-hmm. it's not even going to resonate to her that I'm bullying someone. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, are there any programs now for that age, especially the six-year-olds, the elementary, that teaches the whole class what bullying is so that specifically they know that if I'm told not to play with someone or if somebody comes to me and tells me that I can't play with so-and-so or I've told them not to play with you, that is bullying.
Yeah, so there are programs, you know, and because, like, for me, I am at one school right now. I'm at an alternative school in Toronto, Canada, but I have been for 9 years, well, actually for 15, but for 9 years, I've been with the Toronto board here, and I've been moving mainly from classroom to classroom. So I have some of the same schools I go back to. I see the kids over time. And what I would say is, like, there are programs. I don't get to see all of them because I'm all over the place and kind of switching, but I know what works for me in terms of a teacher. And so I have my kind of like sense of what's happening. My sixth sense in a classroom is like hyper vigilant, you know, and I'm kind of really checking in to see how kids are feeling, you know, and their body language and their facial expressions and just kind of monitoring that so that if they do have something going on, I will know, I'll notice, I can check in with them and then support them to figure it out. But the biggest thing is we're doing a food theme right now at school, and I got a bunch of, it's really cute actually, I got like a bunch of vegetables and fruits, mm-hmm. and we turned them into little characters. We put googly eyes on them, and so there was a sweet potato, and we turned it into a guinea pig, and they had like, you know, a pepper that was a bunny and just like different ones. There was a celery that was a snake. But then we videoed the kids and I was in, like, we did like a little play. I was part of the play and we talked about, you know, our play was going to be that we had a new kid coming to our school and we were going to, I was going to be the mean character and they were going to be allies and stand up to me and say, that's not kind. So, you know, I really find that we get scared and we freeze, like either when we're the victim, we freeze, when we're being bullied or bystanders. And so if we have this practice of role playing and really integrating all that language and practice and also calling in, so like not, like I really try my absolute hardest not to shame the children. So when I see kids doing mean things, bullying or just being unkind, I call out the best of them. So because I've built this relationship, so I notice their new hair style or their jacket or their new toy. So I'm interested in them genuinely. So, and that's with all my students. So they already know I'm somebody that they can trust and that I care about them and I see them and hear them and respect them. So if they do something unkind, they already feel connected to how our connection. So to have me disappointed in them really mirrors back that something is seriously wrong with their behavior right now. And they need to kind of like take a look and reflect and then take accountability. So I do my best not to shame them. I always say, this is not the best of you, sweetie. Like I know who you are. Sometimes I'll talk to them kind of one-on-one in the side of the classroom so that, you know, other kids aren't listening. Sometimes we'll have a group discussion, but it's never ever too young. So we're talking about, and this is actually what I was saying with the epidemic of bullying. This needs to be the whole way through. This does not stop in kindergarten or grade one. This needs to be all educators, all parents, all social workers, all society on board with this movement, because we need people that are aligned with their truth and acting in integrity for the world.
Very well said. Listeners, we're listening to Rachel Weinstock, who is an elementary school teacher, as she said. She's also an artist and motivational speaker, and she has been teaching for over 15 years. She's known as Miss Rainbow Fairy, which is quite a cute name to thousands of kids because of her alternative approach to education, which she has been explaining in this segment. She's also on a mission to speaking to educators, parents, caring adults about how to create emotionally safe and empowering spaces. As she says, what she is promoting is, you know, people to understand the epidemic of bullying and also to learn, you know, how to teach coping skills to young and old alike. So we were talking a little bit about, you know, what happened in elementary school, you know, for her as she started. Now, did the bullying continue in middle school?
Yes. Dr. Stem, it did not really end.
So I'm hoping that those parents that have children that are in elementary will understand that bullying comes in this, in the form of, don't play with someone, I don't want to play with you, I don't want to talk with you. How does it look like in middle school, bullying?
Well, that was, I mean, you know, it kind of got, it's interesting. I was talking with a friend of mine who works in child welfare, and I was explaining to him another story, and I was saying that when the behaviors don't get stopped, this was about a child not telling the truth about something, and it was a very simple thing, but their resistance to tell the truth over the situation when I saw that they were not telling the truth, like they said something was theirs and it really wasn't, their resistance to tell the truth was so strong that it took over an hour to get the truth out of them. So I was talking about how sometimes these behaviors, they go unchecked by either like home life and or also education. So they solidify, they get stronger. It's like feeding kind of a beast, right? Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I really believe deep down, almost all of us, unless there's something like mental health wise wrong or there's severe trauma, like we all, even like severe trauma and mental health, we all want, and we lose our way sometimes for many different reasons. So in middle school, like you're asking about how it looked like for me, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Middle school was vicious. It got, I mean, grade one was terrible too, but So that was a lot of just telling me awful things about myself, telling me I was stupid, telling me I was ugly, telling me I looked like a boy. And it was a huge group of kids. I had actually left my private school because at that point I had said to my teacher, who was like supposed to be kind of like I forget what you call it, but like it's like somebody to make sure you're transitioning from elementary to middle school well. So she was just one of our teachers, and she asked me, so how is it going in grade 7? And I said to her everything that was happening. I said, all these boys are bullying me. I'm scared to go to my locker. I'm crying every night. You know, they're saying terrible things to me. And so I finally felt like, oh, thank God somebody's listening to me and she's going to do something, you know. I finished after like 20 minutes of telling her everything. And she said, okay, great. So it sounds like everything else is going well. And I just remember kind of my heart sinking to my toes and thinking she's not going to do anything. And she didn't. So I left that school and had this vision of public school. I thought in my mind, so because I was coming from private school, I thought public school would be the greenest grasses and I'd be the most popular person and everybody would be so nice to me and they'd be so cool and I'd be so cool and it'd be amazing. And what I did have friends, but it actually was like a hell for me. It was awful. Yeah. So, you know, essentially what happened was there were two boys and I was friends with one of them and another kid was bullying both me and that boy. And we used to stick up for each other. So I didn't have the power to stick up for myself. So I would defend him. And eventually he turned on me and he would follow me on this like shortcut pathway every day and say horrible things to me every single day in grade 8. And I would, and they were huge. Like I'm quite petite. I'm 5'4" and at the time I was 90 pounds. So it was really intense. And by that point I was depressed and anxious and, you know, not really not in a good space. And it moved, unfortunately, like he and this other boy had a huge group of boys in the neighborhood and I was pretty much the only girl. We moved onto the bus and they just took the entire bus at the back and would say these things every single day. On my way home because I would get carpooled on the way there. So every day for like 5 years, I would hear just awful things about myself. And not once did anybody on that bus or the bus driver or anybody else ever say stop. So I went through that for 5 years. And then that was basically my story. It's like I survived. And then I dedicated my life to not letting this happen to anybody as much as I can.
I'm just like thinking of the self-esteem, self-worth, you know, I mean, yours have given 5 years of hearing how terrible, how horrible you look and, you know, how that must have felt for you.
Yeah, I still struggle. I have like a lot of things out of that, you know, mental health wise and physically. I deal with chronic pain that directly related out of a lot of things from that. So it has impacted my entire life. Like, and that's why I'm so adamant about people taking it seriously, about educators and parents and stepping up and saying, no, this has to be something that we're taking the time to do. Because, you know, I had something happen to a child today. And it was just like, she came screaming out of the room. Like, and I didn't know if she was physically or emotionally hurt. And she had been emotionally hurt. And she told me what had been said to her. And I walked her through like all this stuff of like, yes, it's awful what was said to you. And we're going to do some practicing of what to say if that happens again. And I'm going to let all the other teachers know this is not going to be said to you again. So I did a lot of like steps.
Were you able to talk to the children that, you know, teased you?
Because this is, we did do a lot of resolution, but I mainly worked with her and some other teachers worked with the other kids. Okay. So, and it was resolved. I was monitoring just kind of the way that they interacted the rest of the day and they were good and there was an apology, but there's clarity around that is not going to be spoken again to her, you know? And so it's, yeah, I mean, our self-esteem is very fragile and it needs to be built up. So it's definitely affected, you know, so many areas of my life. But you know, the positive is I have such a high success rate with what I do. Like I would say like it's in the 90 something percentile of like effectiveness of stopping this kind of stuff. Like I'm able to get on their level and just understand from all sides, from the side of the victim, from the side of the bullying, and see them as just whole beings that need to be called in and just kind of talked through and given strategies, you know, because that's our goal as adults, is to guide these children.
You're right. Well, you know what? Let me take a quick break, and then we're gonna come back and talk more about, you know, the epidemic of bullying.
Recognized as a groundbreaking news and lifestyle platform, an alternative news source requires top-tier analysts, strategic thinkers, and impressive commentators. I'd like you to meet Ilana Friedman. She's a strategic counterterrorism intelligence analyst, a columnist, and commentator on America Out Loud. Ilana, when it comes to intelligence gathering and the NSA, the idea of spying on Americans stateside, have they crossed the line?
They crossed the line a long time ago. Unfortunately, they have taken so many liberties that I would say that they have probably, it's not clear, but they have probably broken a number of laws in collecting information and intelligence from American citizens and using it against them.
How can America Out Loud bridge the gap and bring back trust to the people we serve?
Malcolm, you are already doing a great job in providing your listeners with informed and diverse opinions on very, very important topics that give your listeners the opportunity to inform themselves and make their own minds up about how they feel about important issues, and then bring them back to their own communities where they can act accordingly.
Our goal is simple. It's to deliver an honest analysis and diverse opinions to keep you informed. Back at AmericaOutLoud.com. International news, world events, or an improved lifestyle. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
We are talking about the epidemic of bullying, and I have Miss Rainbow Fairy with me. Her real name is Rachel Weinstock. And, you know, the first half we were talking about some of the signs and symptoms of, you know, what bullying was like for her, and now what she's teaching other children, you know, to look for, and the teachers. So what I wanted to talk in this segment is, if you're teaching a young, you know, girl or boy, 6 years old, you know, the ones in elementary, who do they talk to? How do they express themselves? Do you get into that deep of a conversation with them?
Yes. Yes, I do. You know, so, okay, maybe let's, I'm going to take it back to,
okay.
So in the work that I do as a speaker, I've had to reflect on what am I doing that is so effective that I can resolve these things that are happening, that I'm able to inspire kids to be their very best and create these amazing communities that kids love. Like, they beg me to be their teacher. Like, they fight over who I'm teaching. So I'm really doing something that I know is right because I can see the reflection and how they interact with me. You know, they go home and tell stories, or, you know, want to show me things. So there's something good that I'm doing I literally have told the kids, I can't be your teacher forever, but what I will do is promise to talk and teach the adults, share with the adults what I'm doing. So that's really what my mission is as a speaker now. So in terms of reflecting on what I do, I have three main building blocks. And the first thing is emotional intelligence. So you need to understand your own emotional landscape, you know, to some degree for sure. And then you also need to understand theirs, you know, because as adults, we forget like how sensitive kids are many times. And we're just like, why would you make that choice? You know? And of course there's, you know, if you're a teacher, you got like 30 other kids and, you know, somebody punches somebody in the face, there's times where you lose your cool, you know, but ultimately I'm always coming in from a foundation of their incredible human beings. They made a bad choice. It's my job to calmly talk to them and ask them why they made that choice, but hold them accountable. And I won't let things go. So that's one thing. I have this like inner kind of, I don't know, like a terrier, like a dog that I'm like, no, I won't let that cloth go or something. That I really focus on that. So the emotional intelligence is absolutely key. They need to feel that you care about them genuinely. It can't be fake, because kids, you know, kids know everything. They're really intelligent. And then the second part is conflict resolution. So we need skills. If you are working with kids, you need to have skills on conflict resolution. Yelling at them does not work, right? You know, of course there's times, again, like you lose your cool, but you need to actually be able to figure out how to do conflict resolution with them. And if you don't know, you need to practice those skills and study them, because if you are a teacher, you're dealing with conflict, or if you're a parent, you're dealing with conflict. And then the third thing is play and creativity. So I am super playful with my kids, like, and creative. Like, I often am like in their games as if I'm one of them. Like, they don't see me as a different person. So I don't, like, there's so many examples of this. Like, you know, when I was playing the character with the food, and I was, you know, one of the characters. And so, you know, I have puppet voices that I use. Something that's really effective. If kids, like, you can, you know, the old saying, you can get so many more flies with honey than vinegar. Really, if you're kind to them and you're playful, the play and creativity is their language. So if you ever want to know the international language of children, it is play and creativity. And so if you play with them, if you're silly, if you, you know, it builds this really like a real language of like, oh, you know my culture, you get me. Okay, now you're accepted and I'm going to trust you and I'm going to let you into my world. So, sometimes they've done something, you know, terrible. And, you know, like I said, they might have hit somebody or stolen something or whatever it is. And they won't take responsibility. You know, they're not used to maybe being called out, or they're not used to being held accountable. And I know that this is a life lesson for them. And I know it's important. I can feel that this is not a healthy way for them to continue in their life. So I take the time, and sometimes I say, okay, so did you take that person's eraser? And they say, no, I didn't. And I saw them take the eraser, so I know they did. And then I continue, sweetie, I'm not mad. I just want to know if you took the eraser. No, I told you I didn't take the eraser. And I can hear their tone escalating, right? Mm-hmm. So then I'll say, okay, just stay calm. You can keep your tone just calm. I'm just talking to you. So, and then sometimes I'll say, you know, I can see they're not going to tell me the truth. So I'll say in a different voice, all right, did you take the eraser? Because I was watching you and I think that you took the eraser. And then they crack into a smile. Like, this is with elementary kids. But, you know, and then they say yes. So it's like when we can't get what we want, you know, like using and integrating play into that. And the same thing with bullying. You know, if somebody has done something terrible, sometimes, depending on the situation, I will weave in, you know, a comedy aspect. I'll replay events. Like, they love role playing, and role playing is the most effective thing. So actually, this is something great for parents and educators out there. Okay. So if you have a situation and you want them to really learn the lesson, put them in different roles and let them play the different roles, and you facilitate it, but get them to be like the mean teacher, or get them to be, or the mean kid that's not including them, and get them to be the allies and see how to kind of facilitate finding resolution to that conflict. And that is the most effective thing, because then you build their kind of like inner muscle, like their inner like core muscle of like how to advocate for themselves and how to stop others when they see what's happening. Because this is something that needs to be happening, you know, right from the get-go. If it's not happening at home, school is responsible, in my opinion, you know, to pick up any slack that's not being able to be taught at home. And we need to create safe spaces for kids and really, you know, hold that accountability, push them to be the best they can be. And that starts with the character. Academics is always on top of it. You need to have that emotional connection with them in order to do anything. And then they can really, you know, they just rise. Like, they just surpass anything that you would ever think they could be.
You know what I wish, you know, happened? I just moved to Florida 2 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. And I used to be in Boston, Massachusetts. And in Boston, Massachusetts, I chose to have my private practice office in a high school rather than being in the city and, you know, being downtown somewhere. I decided to be in the high school, and what I did was I went to the principal and I told him that I'm a private practitioner, mental health, you know, practitioner, but what I wanted was if he has a room that I can use as a counseling office, you know, for students and then also meet with parents. And his first thing was, who's going to pay you? I said, sir, you don't have to worry about paying me because I get paid by the health insurance. So what I need is your permission for me to come in the school and then also permission to be able to talk to, you know, the counselors so that they can refer the students to me, right? And he says, okay, as long as we don't have to pay you, I can find a room for you. And I was like, whoa, can you imagine? So for 10 years, I was in a high school and my office was there. Here was the beauty of doing that. The beauty of doing that is working with teenagers, because that's my population. Working with teenagers, if you give them a slip at school and say, you know, they need to go for counseling and the parents come in and take that little paper and they go in and put it on the counter or put it in the dresser somewhere, that's it. They forget about it because they're busy and the kid doesn't want to go to counseling anyway. So because I was in the school, an incident like bullying, you know, fighting or something, you know, happens, even if, you know, a student was not one of my clients that I was seeing as a client, I spoke to the teachers and I said, listen, my name is Dr. Stam. I have an office in here. I will do crisis intervention for, you know, for you all. You can send them to me and I can talk to the kids. Do you know how busy I was?
Yes, I have every clue how busy you are.
But the beauty of that, right, was that the teachers didn't have to deal with it because then you have 30 students and here comes these two students that, you know, I mean, one is crying and the other one is still, you know, taunting the other kid and stuff. Yeah. And you have 30 other kids that are running around. The beauty of that was they would just call me and say, could you come to classroom, you know, such and such. And then I would go in if the counselors are busy, because then now they had the privilege of having three counselors, one that was not paid. And then, you know, I would take the kids out, come and talk to them, and then we call the parents and do that. But it's a service that was so helpful that when I left, I felt for the teachers and the kids because I was so attached to them and I was a part of their staff. But it helped, you know, because I did the trainings, you know, I was doing the workshops for students and I was doing workshops for teachers, talking about the, you know, the bullying and how teachers can, you know, intervene and the students, you know, doing the role plays like you're saying and working and doing some of those groups there. But I wish that was available to every school, the additional help, you know?
Yeah, it should be absolutely standard. Okay, like I just like it actually blows my mind. We have social workers. Okay, so I don't know what your numbers are in the States, and I know like probably, you know, different states are, they run very differently. But so in our area, we have one social worker usually for eight schools. Now I will tell you being a teacher and being on the ground level, and you know this by working with a high school, one class could keep you busy for the rest of your life if you did like kind of work. They really could, depending on the class. They really could, you could just dedicate your entire life to that class and you'd be full, like with like filled up with like, you know, never ending tasks of like working through stuff, whatever. But then you have eight schools, which sometimes like one school has 1,000 kids, like 500, usually between 500 to 1,000. Well, I mean, that could be, you know, that amount of people, right? It could be 8,000.
Yeah.
That's not, humanly possible. And let's take it back to the classroom. Humanly possible. You would not, I always say this, like you would not have, unless you're running an orphanage and then you'd have like support or some organization, you would not have 30 children at the same time. It is biologically impossible.
No, it is.
Not have 30 kids at one time. So it is really not, you know, it's so challenging to have 30 kids and one human being that's an adult trying to facilitate and then all the needs and everything else on top of that. So, you know, we really need to think about class size and, you know, character education in a very practical way. We have something here called character education and we have assemblies for it and we talk about kindness, but this has to be day to day, like, you know, kids on the playground, that's all the places it happens, is like when, you know, they have free play and it's like somebody's not including, or in high school in the hallways, or, you know, like all the in between parts, that's the parts we need to focus our attention on. And then in between, when they're in our care and under supervision, like more so, then we need to really continue to implement like all this kind of, you know, activism and like being our best selves, so that they really have a strong foundation of humanity in their hearts.
Yeah. I still talk about these kids that used to come in and say, Dr. M, I hate so-and-so. And I'm looking at them and say, why?
Yeah.
Because I just don't like them. I say, you just don't like them? There's no reason. No, I just don't like her. Or I just don't like him. And I'm going, but you can't do that. You can't just hate somebody and you know, give them a hard time just because. And you have no reason for it. I mean, but as far as they're concerned, it makes sense to just not like somebody just because.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've had cases of students. I mean, we all have our personal preferences, right? So there, it's definitely there. But I think what's interesting is sometimes when kids hate each other, they're the most similar. Like they have the most similar personalities. They're usually like quite like big personalities that want to be kind of the person in charge, the visionary of whatever game they're playing or whatever project they're doing. So one time I had two kids that absolutely hated each other and they were fighting. And I do so much resolution of like one person talks at a time. And I'm able to, like I said, I have a high success rate of like really helping to facilitate healing in that. This particular, you know, pair of kids, I could not get through to. And I kept trying and trying and trying. And eventually I got so frustrated. I said, you know what? I have no idea how to get you guys to see one another. But what I see is that you're so similar. So what I want you to do is I don't want you to talk any more about your problem or what you have an issue with. I want you to look at each other, take a moment and decide what you really like, something that you admire in that person. And as soon as I did that, they started thinking about all these amazing things. Do you know what? They were friends from that day on. I saw them years later and they were like, we're still friends and we still remain. Nobody could solve it. Nobody could solve it for years. It was going on for years in that school.
I like that.
I went in one day and I said, you know what? Find something good. I'm not leaving until you've found a way to kind of connect. And they became good friends.
I love that solution. Yes, yes. I love that solution. You know, and sometimes I think we have to do that to help these kids, you know, take a look at it in another way rather than just that one way that they look at, you know, situations. But that way, yeah, that was really good. That was really
good. We lose our cool and we, if we see a child, like, you know, I know sometimes you have kids that really they could like equal 10 on their own, you know, and it's like the behavior and the needs and all, like it is so overwhelming. And then you've got the rest of the class. So I so know that feeling, and it is really, they equal in value of like how much energy you need to pay attention to them. They can take up the whole room by themselves. So, but I never move away from trying to find like the best of them. Like, it's almost like I imagine that there's like a diamond inside them, like a heart or something. And I want to reach that part, like the best part of them is that's what I'm looking to connect with. And I don't think that it's not in, I think it's all children. So I know that all children have this, like, you know, their biggest, their best expression of who they are. And so I look for that and I continue to find ways to connect with them. And I, especially the kids that, you know, are, you know, quote unquote, like at risk or, you know, behaviorally challenged and they have like kind of aggressive outbursts or whatever. I imagine I have a white wing and I take them under my wing metaphorically and just like imagine that I'm doing an extra effort to connect with them, an extra effort to have a secret handshake with them, an extra effort to notice their new hat, an extra effort to ask them something, an extra effort to make a joke. Because when I escalate, right, when they're like in the middle of trying to punch somebody in the schoolyard, I can de-escalate them because they trust me already. And then I can talk to them about like what happened. Let's try and make this a better situation. Let's, you know, but if you don't have that connection, then forget it, you know?
And you bring up a really good point, because I always, you know, tell everyone to say, you know, one of the things that especially these young children do not like is if you don't have a connection with them and you don't talk to them, you don't see them, you know, don't wait until they get into something and then you want to be like, oh, you know, I'm the adult and you have to listen to me, especially in the high school, middle school and high school, then they will reassure you, you know, I mean, we are, yeah, because they see right through adults. And like you, you know, I understand, because then I always believe, you know, my thing is the tone of voice, that I come in with a whole different tone of voice that is just calm and, you know, I'm not fighting you. I just want to make sure that at least you don't hurt anybody else, you know, any further or hurt yourself. So I'm here, you know, to make peace. And once you do that, I remember some kids saying, oh, I just hate you with that voice of yours. You just want to be. And to me, I'm like, you know, you can hate it all you want, but what I appreciate about you is you respect the voice, because once I say something, at least it takes you some time, but I know you're going to calm down, because then we've talked about this, that when I come, I'm coming in peace. I don't want to fight you. I don't want to, you know, I'm not saying you're wrong or you're right, but I just want to take you away from that so that it doesn't make worse, you know, make a worse situation for you. So please come with me when you see me out. And, you know, eventually most of them knew and understood that, you know, okay, that's what she stands for. And sometimes, you know, they're so heated up that you just have to walk away, and then they'll come by themselves, you know, and say, okay, now I'm here. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. So like, yeah, the like tone of voice, like because I want the kids to be aware of this too. Right. So the tone of voice, I tell them, what color is your voice right now? And they'll choose a color that is kind of like the like poisonous escalation voice. Oh, and you know, usually they choose the color red, but they choose different colors sometimes. And then the other color is the calm voice. Right. And I'll say that, like, you know, for younger kids, I'm like, what color is your voice right now? Cause I hear how you're talking, you know, change it to the other one. So that really helps them to activate their imagination and get it clear for them. But in adults, we need to own that, right? So like I was speaking at a conference, and this woman was like, so when I do like a question and answer period, I'm very intuitive and kind of like, I see images in my mind of like, okay, this needs to be said to this. So this woman puts up her hand and says, well, what do you do with teenagers that don't listen? Like, you know, my child does not listen. I said, that's interesting. I said, let me ask you this. Do you listen to her? And then all this stuff unraveled. Well, she never listens to my rules and she doesn't do what I say. And like, you know, and it was like, huh? Okay. So, but like, it sounds like she doesn't feel like she's being heard. Because if you see them as your equal, and the only job you have to do is to kind of protect their confidence and their self-esteem and build them up in that way, and then guide them on like really important life lessons. Don't touch a stove, you know, tie your shoelaces when you're going up the stairs, before you're going up the stairs, like things like that. Be kind to each other. But there's a lot of times where they have just as much, like there are equals, you know, they could, and actually they could teach us a lot about humanity. Like, you know, they want truth, they want justice, they want, you know, structure and things. So they have a lot to offer us. So, you know, I'm always on their level, meaning I'm physically on their level, that I'm bending down. I never tower over students to talk to them. I'm always bending down if they're shorter than me. And if they're taller than me, I'm on my toes. But yeah, I'm always bending down and really sitting on a chair or being on the carpet with them, so that they don't feel this imbalance, power imbalance, but also physical imbalance of my size difference with them. And, you know, so I think a lot of things with teenage years and elementary and all of it, bullying and all the things, it comes down to your connection with your child. So, and that's built over time, right? And that's built with students and that's built with your kids. And it can be built, like for me, I go into a class and because I'm a substitute, I have a lot of like new students all the time, like every day sometimes, right? And so I have to be really quick to build a connection. So I bring myself into the equation. I tell them, I always do an introduction and I say, my name is Miss Weinstock, but I have a very serious name. And then I kind of give them the like, pretend I'm looking at my eyeballs and their eyeballs. And I say, nobody laugh, and make this very serious face. And of course they all break into laughter. And then I say, all right, here's a serious, serious name. And I say, my serious name is Miss Rainbow Fairy. And then they break into laughter. You know, and that name comes from me wanting to have them have an example of an adult that's outside of the box, but also that I want them to know I'm fun and I'm a safe person. You know, like I'm a safe person that they can come to. So they get the name, then they hear my cat's name, which is Luna Magic Trust Rainbow Sparkle Weinstock. Whoa. And then they get so excited. Oh my God, you have a cat, and can I see pictures? And then I tell them, usually I tell them I have a learning disability or a learning difference, because a lot of kids struggle in school and feel, you know, I mean, it breaks their spirit that they're not good enough, they're not smart, and they just learn differently. So I share that with them that, and then we start our day. You know, and then so already they have a sense, okay, I'm funny, I'm caring. And also I practice, you know, really classroom management of like, I'm talking, you're not talking while I'm talking. So they know I'm in control of the situation, but I'm also really fun and fair. So they get a sense right away. You know, you get a sense of somebody right away, and I want them to know that. And so building a relationship, and let's say you've had a relationship that's been really difficult for a long time with a child, you just don't see eye to eye, and it's a younger child, ask them.
Let me do this, right?
We're gonna start, what is it?
Yeah, we're going to start off where you have a difficult relationship with a child. So let me take a quick break.
Perfect. Yeah.
I know I'm past my break time. And then we'll start with, you know, you have a relationship with a difficult child in the next segment, okay?
No problem, sure.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, so in the last segment, I know I stopped you when you were trying to explain about if you don't get along with your child. I'll let you start from that.
Yeah, so the biggest thing is to come from this sense in yourself of you don't give up. So if you've had a difficult relationship with your child as a parent or a guardian or as a, you know, they're your student and you're their teacher, the idea is that you don't give up. You can take breaks, you can get frustrated, but you find ways to come back to, you know, points of connection. And what I was saying is sometimes, oftentimes, if you put the ball in their court and say like, hey, what do you want to do? Like, there's no tech involved today, but we're going to spend some time doing something either as a parent or guardian or in the classroom. Like if you're having a difficult time with a child and you say, you know, to the student, I'd love you to tell me like you and a couple friends can hang out with me at recess. What do you want to do? What do you want to play or do? And like, and kind of get connected in their world. Then that builds the connection for other difficult, more serious situations that happen in their life. And they trust you and will go to you about them.
Awesome. Miss Rainbow Fairy.
Yes.
I'm wondering if you can help us, you know, probably three things that might be helpful for healing since we are talking about the epidemic of bullying.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, I myself have had a journey in therapy and have tried many different kinds of things. So, you know, therapy would be one of them as a potential. And of course, everybody is different. So, you know, it's not necessarily only therapy that works, or maybe it does or doesn't. But I would say some therapeutic form of that people can talk through things or whatever, depending on how serious the bullying has been going on and the impact. And then in that, even if you are not doing therapy, to know your triggers. And when I say that, I mean, like there are certain situations, if you've been through bullying, that you have triggers that will come up. And so that's really important to know what kind of situation. So I know sometimes in a large group of people that my triggers come up and I get like really anxious and it feels like I'm back in high school or elementary school and I need to remove myself sometimes. So I just have to know kind of, you know, through life and through living that these are my triggers and take care of them. Try and practice like what will help me to move through them. The second thing for me, and this is different for everybody, but to do something there, like to find things that kids are passionate about. So for me, it was art. Like that helped save my life. And I just immersed myself in getting really, really good at art. I studied dance. I studied a lot of different things. But, you know, somebody else, it might be martial arts. It might be cooking. So ask your kids, especially if they've been through bullying, but all kids, like, what's your interest? Let's explore. Let's put you in a camp or let's get you a mentor. And keep asking them because it evolves. And stay aware, oh, they're very dramatic, so maybe we can try a drama class. Because sometimes I tell parents that and they're like shocked. They're like, oh, really? I just thought they're just kind of like, you know, expressive. I'm like, get them in something. They love it, you know, and they could do well with it. And then the third thing is meditation, exercise, you know, things like that, that really helps to kind of calm the nervous system, expend energy, you know, just bring you back to center. And I do a gratitude journal. I do a practice every night where I look at in review in my mind of all the magical moments of the day, you know, and it helps me stay grounded in the good and what's positive in my life. So now I've been doing it for over a year and I do it every night. I go to bed and I sit in my bed and just think like, what am I grateful for? And I write in my rainbow pens in my magical book, my gratitude.
Rainbow pens. I like that. You know, I just pulled out my gratitude journal today and I said,
oh nice.
I've been forgetting to write in it. So thank you for that reminder.
Yeah.
I will pull that out. So as we end this show, I have some fun questions to ask Miss Rainbow Fairy. Since you teach elementary school and you are Miss Rainbow Fairy, I've got some questions that I just wanted, fun questions to ask you as we end.
Yes.
Because the topic was serious in itself. So I also want to remind people that, you know, on that serious side, there's also a lighter side on, you know, this topic. But before I go to ask you those, you know, questions as we end, and they're real quick one-word answers that I'll be asking, I want to remind, you know, parents especially on what you said in the first segment about the young lady who was bullying you when you were in sixth grade. And you mentioned that, you know, there was, of course, turmoil at home. The parents were getting a divorce and she didn't know how to deal with what was happening at home. It's very critical that parents understand that whatever is happening at home is going to be acted out either as a bully or they will become a victim. So it's critical that parents take note of what's happening at home, how you're dealing with things at home, whether it's personal, relationships, you know, I mean, or is there an illness that's going on at home? And if there is, that you do seek a way that, you know, your children can have an outlet to talk about the emotions related to what's happening at home, because then that's part of that prevention as well that we can do to try and prevent incidences of bullying in the school system.
Yeah, I would say they need somebody outside of that situation that they trust and that is good with connecting with children, that they can express that. Because you're right, everything that comes into our school, like so much trauma is happening if somebody terminally ill or somebody, and there's so much, you know, chaos over that. But then those little beings that seem okay, all of that gets acted out in you know, school setting.
Yeah, because they don't know how to deal with those
things.
All right. So what's your favorite color?
Oh, so hard. I always get asked this. Can I say rainbow?
I don't care. It's yours.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Rainbow. What's your favorite food?
Pizza.
Pizza. Favorite hobby?
Teaching, but it's not a hobby.
Okay, Miss Teacher. If your student had to answer that, would that be a hobby?
Okay, I'll say art.
Okay. Any countries that you visited besides Canada?
Japan.
Where?
Japan, sorry.
Oh, Japan, okay.
Yeah, I lived there.
Oh, yeah. You lived in Japan. Yeah. That's awesome. What's your favorite book?
Ooh,
that you've read.
Book. That's such a good question. Yeah, I mean, The Alchemist is coming to mind right now. I know there's others, but The Alchemist, I'll say, by Paulo Coelho. I think I'm saying it right.
Okay. Favorite movie?
I have a few. I'll say Titanic. I love old costumes.
Titanic. And the last one, your favorite quote?
My favorite what?
Quotation.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, I'm looking at my two on the wall. Okay, be true to who you are.
Actually,
I'm going to change it, Dr. Sam. I'm going to say be the person you needed when you were younger.
Ooh, okay.
That's what I live by, so yeah.
You know what? We could do this forever. Thank you so much for having been my guest today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And to get more information on Miss Rachel Weinstock, who is known as Miss Rainbow Fairy, you can get to the link of this show. I will have all her websites and information on where to contact her. As I end this show, I want to end with this quote. Be nice to people because the world can be a very difficult place and we all need a little help sometimes. Thank you for listening to the Dr. STEM Show. And as I always say, be encouraged and encouraging.
One of the ways that parents want to use something or to trust in a program that somebody has said is through testimony. So I have Jamie, and you're going to have to help me with your last name again.
It's MacArthur.
MacArthur, who wouldn't go away without saying her testimony because she's so entrusted in the children in between programs. And I thought, you know what? Let me give her an opportunity to share with you all how the program was helpful to her.
Yeah, thank you. I actually took the course about three and a half years ago, I'd say. I was going through a pretty tough divorce, a lot of anger and jealousy. And I took the course. I think we were still, it was just beginning. The divorce was just beginning. And I, at the time, actually, I wasn't even speaking to my ex. And I went through the course, and it took me probably a day or so to really think about what I had learned, all of the messages, you know, iMessages, active listening, and it hit me pretty hard on how I could have better discussed things with my ex. So I actually ended up calling him the next day and asking him if he would take the same course. And he said that he would. It took a couple of days, I think. And he ended up calling me back and saying that we should sit down and discuss, you know, what we were going to do as far as my son is concerned. So it really, really had a big impact on him as well. And since then, we've actually had a great relationship. As far as communicating, it did take a while, but the continuing of using the skills that I learned in the program really helped. And yeah, I think that any parent, even if you're not going through a divorce, could really benefit from learning how to communicate, not just with an ex, but anyone in general. It teaches you the skills that you probably already know, but watching the films and going through those skills and remembering them and practicing them really makes an impact. It had a huge impact in my life.
What I like, thank you for sharing that. What I like about them too is they help you to control your anger because, you know, as you mentioned, there was a lot of anger and not even talking to each other between the two of you. But once you watch it and take the course, you understood yourself and you know, how the anger wasn't going to help, you know, with the parenting, right?
Right, right. I was more of the defensive person. He, you know, had a lot of anger towards me, and then I would counteract and fight back. And once I finally learned that, hey, you know, stepping back, stop, look, and listen, I remember that one. You really, it takes time, but it is effective.
How old was your son at that time?
He was three.
He was 3 years old. Very young. Yeah. Very young. Do you think it will be helpful for parents that also have like a little older children that understand, can see, you know, 13, 15?
Absolutely. Actually, I think that might benefit them more because the kid understands at that point what's going on and it tends to affect older children more, I would think. Younger children, my son was affected emotionally. He could sense the tension, I think.